Now, our first speaker today, we're very lucky to have Carol Austin, who's going to be joining us. Carol is a very high-octane economist. She's got a very impressive list of directorships. She is formerly an economist with the Reserve Bank. She's been corporate affairs head at BHP. But basically, what Carol is going to do for us now is really set the scene about the economic and investment environment into which people will be retiring and the implications that of what that will be having for retirees who will be facing the long-term future. So give her a big hand, Carol. She's going to set the scene for us about the economy.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm delighted to be here and to be talking about the medium-term outlook. As economists, we typically get asked to talk about the very near term, which is really just an extrapolation of current conditions, or we get asked to talk about the long term, and no matter how complicated the models, they're typically about mean reversion. The medium term, which I think is what's most relevant for retirees, that sort of 3 to 5 year time frame, it's long enough to allow policies to settle down, and it's a short enough time frame that you can actually make some changes. That's the really tricky thing, because it's anchored to the present, but it really does need to be finessed very differently from just assuming mean reversion. So I want to talk about how I approach medium-term forecasting. What I try to do is understand what the authorities are trying to achieve. That, in my view, is critically important. Then I work out whether they're prepared to do what's necessary to achieve that. Those things are two quite different things. And finally, they might aspire to do it, but do they actually have the means to do it? So I'm putting the emphasis on the medium term on what governments do and their ability to deliver. The other thing I want to talk about is, although we're in Australia and although we're talking about retirement incomes for Australians, the reality is that the US sets the global bond market, it sets the global equity market, and all other markets price off the US market. So most of my talk will be focused on what's happening in the US because they will drive those key markets, equities and debt. At the end of 2011, early 2012, I was asked to speak at an investment committee about the medium-term outlook. And at that stage, commentators were pondering whether we were going into GFC Mark II. We'd already had Greece in enormous crisis. There was very serious discussion about the euro breaking up. So I did a lot of work to think about whether those three things would deliver, the three things I talked about, government policy, the commitment to it, and the feasibility of it. And I formed the view that the Fed would do what was necessary to deliver a more stable outcome. And so I presented to this group of investors and I said it was a good time to buy risk assets. Now remember, Greece is collapsing, they're talking about the euro falling apart. And I said, I think it'll be a good time to buy risk assets. I did it for two reasons. One, the equity risk premium was extremely high. And two, I believe that the Fed would push investors out along the risk spectrum into risk assets, and that would cause those risk assets to reprice. Roll the clock forward a year, I was invited back to speak to the same group. Again, I analysed the data, I looked at policymakers, and I came back to them and said, we've had a really good rally in equities, but I think equities will continue to rally for exactly the same reasons. Equity risk premiums were attractive, and the policymakers were committed to achieving a stabilisation of the global economy. Third year running, this year in February, I was invited back to speak to the group again. Again, I reported that equity markets had delivered strong returns, and they said to me, fine, but what's going to happen over the next 3 to 5 years? Now, this each year it's become harder. Why? Because the risk premium has contracted. We're now sitting in a situation where the risk premium is positive but quite small, where valuations on equity markets are looking fair to a bit pricey. And indeed, when we look at a whole range of assets, we can see that they're sitting in territory that is very challenging. So let me see if I can get this thing to work. Oh, sorry, I'm in the wrong one. The chart I've got up there shows you the amount of money that the Fed has spent to achieve its policy objectives. And the next several charts look at the profile that that commitment to stabilising the economy is delivered. First chart is looking at cash rates. The flat line at the end of that chart is zero cash rates. Now that chart goes back to the 1950s, so you can see that current cash rates are at unprecedented lows. The next chart looks at the return on US equities in real terms. It's in graph, it's in log form to show you the growth rate. So you can see that mean reversion seems to be an odd concept to be so wedded to in equity markets. We've had a solid rally in equities, but if you look at the period from the 1980s through to the 2000s, there's been a massive rally. So if you were looking at that and just looking at some sort of mean reversion, a big rally from here on doesn't look like it's likely, just looking at the data. The next chart is quite extraordinary. It's long-term bond yields. They go back to the turn of the century, not the 200, the 1900s. And you can see that we've had the most extraordinary rally in the bond market. Again, if you had to be a betting person and think about, are bond yields more likely to go up or go down, given where they are now, I don't think you get any prizes for thinking they're going to go up. The next chart looks at the PE of the US equity market, and it's looking at average earnings, so it's not a current PE, it's a 10-year average earning. Again, so our starting point is that equities are fair to expensive, cash rates are at zero and are only one way for them to go, and that bond yields are at 100-year lows. That's a starting point for thinking about what retirees can expect for their retirement income over the next 3 to 5 years. Now, it would be very easy to conclude that it's all downward from here on. My view is that the Fed has unfinished business, and I think the unfinished business of the Fed will be critical to determining the outlook for investment markets over the next 3 to 5 years. What do I mean by unfinished business? In September 2008, the Fed released a press release following its monthly meeting saying, and remember, this is September 2008, the downside risks to growth and the upside risks to inflation are both of significant concern to the committee. This was a day after Lehman's went into bankruptcy. 2 weeks later, Bernanke appeared in front of Congress pleading for a $700 billion bailout package. If you want to talk about getting something wrong, that must be the biggest clanger in history. The Fed got it profoundly wrong. And it was even worse because Bernanke was a student of the Great Depression. He thought he understood how the economy worked, and more importantly, he thought he could manipulate the levers of government to prevent a repeat of the Great Depression. He was wrong. And as a consequence, he scrambled for the next 5 years to undo the mess that he contributed to. So my view is that the Fed made an absolute determined commitment to fix the problem that they created. Janet Yellen has taken over, but she was part of those decisions. So I think the Fed is committed and has been committed single-mindedly to preventing a repeat of the Great Depression and to returning the US economy to a stable footing. The question is, what does that mean? They talk in terms of inflation and unemployment rates. They are not the key issues. The key issues are the state of the US economy. And by that I mean, is the US economy strong enough to withstand a normal cyclical downturn? In my view, the answer is no. Why? Because the GFC and the subsequent unwinding of it were not a normal cyclical downturn. They were a cyclical downturn combined with a structural deleveraging, a deleveraging of debt that built up over a long period of time and has created enormous structural fragility in the US economy. So as that unwinds, there is a headwind that means that any downturn will be more severe, any vulnerabilities will be much more quickly converted into difficult situations. So the US economy is less able to withstand a downturn. In addition, the government has no dry powder. The fiscal position of the US government is such that if we had a significant downturn, the US could not do today what it did in 2008. It simply doesn't have the capacity to do that. All of the adjustment burden has shifted to monetary policy. Cash rates are zero. The US government owns about half of the US debt on issue. QE has a limited capacity to assist going forward. So you have a very vulnerable economy, and you have a government that has no capacity or has very limited capacity to stimulate. If you're sitting in the Fed's shoes and your credibility is heavily invested in demonstrating that quantitative easing was the right policy, you will err on the side of caution. You cannot allow the economy to slip too close to the recession, because you know if it starts on that downward slide, you can't get it out. They're the realities that you need to think about when you're thinking about how investment markets will perform. As a consequence, I think there is every chance that interest rates will remain a lot lower for a lot longer than the market is pricing. That means cash rate, that means bond rates. And as a consequence, the discount rate that is used to price equities will be lower than is being priced in by many people. So the bottom line is, I think that we are looking at an environment that is highly, highly risky, but that the outcome is likely to be a bit more of the same, i.e. continued repricing of risk assets. Now, there's one other point that I want to introduce again, which is very important to think about it, because I'm conscious of time. If you stood in 2009 and looked at the challenges that the economy faced, which the Fed certainly did, it had a huge stock of debt that had to be financed. The more cheaply you could finance that debt, the more likely it was that they would move to a more sustained footing. So you wanted to see bond rates low and ideally falling. And you needed assets to reprice, and reprice aggressively, to restore balance sheets and to encourage households to spend, businesses to invest and to hire. So when you look 5 years on, we've had 150% rally in equities, and interest rates are at 100-year lows. How did you possibly get declining interest rates and a massive rally in the equity markets? They're meant to move in opposite direction. The glue that holds those two things together is volatility. That period was punctuated by multiple bouts of volatility. Just as people felt comfortable to go back in the equity market, there'd be a crisis and equities would fall and bonds would rally. What we saw over the last 12 months, with Bernanke announcing tapering, the prospect of tapering, and more recently with Ukraine, we've had bouts of volatility diffuse that one-way bet that said, put your money into equities and forget about it. So what I'm suggesting to you over the next 3 to 5 years, that we will still see risk assets reprice and generate positive returns, that we will see modest yields on bonds, and that cash rates will drift up higher. But the way that we make those fit together in a consistent fashion is with a lot of volatility. So that just as people start to think that bonds are a terrible investment because yields are rising, a crisis will happen and the bond market will reprice. Equities will fall and bond yields will fall. That will cause people to be a bit more nervous, and it will stop that one-way bet into equities. So my conclusion to all of you is that it's going to be a bumpy ride, but it's better than the alternative. Thank you.